Hello, everyone, and welcome back to
Hi,
the
Chris.
Retro Asylum Podcast. Look, it's me, Chris, and Mads.
Yes, we're back.
We're back.
Yeah.
It's been a while, mate.
It's been a long while.
Years since the two of us have recorded together on Retro Asylum.
Feels like years, at least.
Well, just me and you, anyway. Yeah. Hasn't it? I reckon it could be like 3 or 4 years.
Ah, can't be that long, can it?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me. I think the last time I did a Retro Asylum episode, it was probably, other than the Christmas one, probably when Jim and I interviewed the guys for that horror documentary.
Yes. Yeah.
And the name of the guy escapes me. I'm looking at Terabytes, the Terabytes episode. Mm. And that was a long time ago now.
Yeah. Same guys that did the soccer thing, football thing.
Yes,
right?
The football book.
And
yeah,
they're working on a project right now as well that I forget about. But
about all the Scum Games?
Oh, was that it? Yes, true.
Yeah, that's
the one that excites me the most then, of those three.
We need to get him back on.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I like him. He's a very... look, I need to look up his name now. This is not a good start, is it, for our adult... What's his blooming name? Richard Moss.
Yes.
Mm. Richard Moss. No, he's a good guy. I like Richard. An Aussie guy who loves his footy.
Yep. And, those were some good episodes.
Yeah, Neil, I reckon that book will be good about all the Scum Games.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of taking a deep dive.
Yeah.
I've got both of his DVDs here. They've got the Terabytes one and I've got the First Person Shooter one.
Mm.
The boat's still in the cellophane.
They're no good like that, mate.
No, I need to get them out and have a look.
Yeah.
Time's limited though, right, isn't it? I mean, if you get a spare hour, my inclination is not to go to the DVD player these days.
No, me neither. I never watch anything, actually.
No, it's very... I did watch... have you ever seen the zombie films, 28 Days, 28 Weeks, and then most recently, 28 Years Later?
I haven't... Yeah, I've actually seen all three of them, yeah.
So we watched 28 Weeks Later last night.
Hmm. Yeah. That's the worst one.
I quite liked it.
It's okay. But, I mean, the first one was a classic, but it's off its time. I rewatched it recently, actually, with one of my kids got into zombie flicks. So I've watched a lot of zombie flicks the past couple of months, actually. And I remember it as being a masterpiece. So rewatching it, I was a bit disappointed, actually. It isn't that good.
Yeah, it's very early noughties, isn't it?
It is, very much so. But the second one... Storytelling-wise, is the bleakest, I think.
It wasn't written by Alex Garland nor directed by Danny Boyle, was it? It was a completely different writing and directing team. So it's got a different flavour for sure. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, the third one I liked. And it's very open, so there's going to be a fourth one, I'm sure.
Fourth one's out now.
Is it? Okay. Mm. Mm.
Yeah, it's called Bone Temple, I think.
Oh, okay.
28 Years Later, the Bone Temple.
There must be that there's that mad doctor that builds kind of structures out of human bones.
Well, I watched the trailer last night after watching 28 Weeks.
Mm.
I watched the trailer for 28 Years and saw that big bone structure, the skull structure.
He's actually a very cool character that you meet in the third movie. So
okay.
I'll be looking forward to seeing his story, actually. That'd be good.
Yeah. I think it's at the cinema as we speak.
Okay.
And then there's going to be one more, isn't there, at least, which has already been announced.
Mm-hmm. I watched another zombie flick, by the way, a very, very silly one called The Dead Don't Die.
The Dead Don't Die.
The Dead Don't Die. Yeah. That's a very, very silly movie. Good fun for a lazy Sunday afternoon.
A comedy?
Actually, yes. I mean, the very deadpan way that they act is just brilliant. It's who were the actors? So you know, Minnie Driver's Adam Driver. Adam Driver was the one of the main actors, and the other one was he's in Ghostbusters. It's
Finn Wolfhard.
No. It's one of the old guys from Ghostbusters from the originals, and I forget which one it was right now. Man, I'm getting old. It's not Dan Aykroyd. It's
Bill Murray.
It's Bill Murray. Yes, sure. And those two, the acting between those two, is brilliant. The movie in itself isn't fantastic in any way, but those two just make me laugh all the way through. Just
so it's
and
a, it's not a new film, is it?
I think, yeah, a couple of years old, probably. Huh. Yeah, it was one of my kids who watched it and said, "We need to watch that."
So Adam Driver, was he Kylo Ren in Star Wars?
Yeah.
I like him.
Yeah, me too. He's a good actor.
Yeah. I'll look that up.
Yeah. The Dead Don't Die. It's very silly, but it's kind of a comedy without being a full-on comedy. It's good. I like it.
We've started this family movie club on a Sunday where we each take turns at picking movies.
Yeah.
And it's my turn this week.
Okay.
So I need some inspiration.
I'm not sure that's a family movie, though.
No, and Hattie is only 12.
Mm.
And she's quite mature, but I do have to remember sometimes that she is only 12.
Yep.
And therefore, I should not pick Hostel.
No. No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't pick that when you have me around.
And it's a terrible movie as well. Some people like that stuff. I'm not into all that. What does Rauschy call it? He calls it something like, was it like torture porn or something?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
So I like to try and pick films that will challenge her a little bit, but are appropriate. You know, but maybe won't be something that she would watch unless I'd suggested it. And it's been good so far.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
I need to get my thinking cap on for tomorrow.
Mm.
But we're not Rich and Blake.
No, we're not.
This is not the Retro Movie Club.
No.
In time-honoured tradition. Well, we suppose we better explain what we're doing here. We really?
Aren't we just waffling? Isn't that it?
Well, other than an excuse to jump on and have a good old waffle, we were... I think I've been really keen to get back onto the Retro Asylum airwaves for quite some time. I know you have as well. And being at Arcade Club a couple of weeks ago really did remind me of just how much I appreciate and love being part of the Retro Asylum and its community. So that I was determined then that we needed to get on and start getting back into doing some regular episodes.
Yeah.
I proposed a Chips Challenge episode back in January. Thought we might do it towards the end of January. Of course, the end of January comes and it goes very quickly. We didn't do it. But I thought, well, the game is still relatively fresh in the mind.
Mm.
It's a good excuse to jump on, have a little natter about Chips Challenge and have a good old fat waffle.
Yeah, sounds good to me, mate.
As well.
And it's a great game. So
it is. And we will talk about that very shortly. But before we do, mate, in time-honored tradition, what have you been up to?
So I've been visiting you. That's what I've been up to since the last.
It was lovely.
Yeah, we had the most wonderful weekend at Arcade Club. Mm. Lots of people there. I think this is probably the first RA episode since then, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So all the hosts except for Matt, sadly, was there. Even Mark came flying in from Utah.
Yeah,
we had the full set of Chris's and Jim and Dean and Steve and me, of course. And then so many listeners, so many people I've talked to for 10 years, maybe even more, that I feel like are my friends, even though I've never really met them in real life. And there they were, and they were my friends. And it was wonderful to see. I mean, I was there Friday afternoon, went back again Sunday evening, and the time just flew. It was gone in a second. And Arcade Club is a fantastic place. Yeah. It's even better than you guys had described it to me. I think you need to be there to see the size of it and the number of arcade machines. You just won't believe it from a description.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. They've got everything. That fourth floor, I went to the fourth floor on the Friday evening and had a walk around. I can't really describe it. Every arcade machine I remember from back in the day was just there and working and I could play on it. And it was, such
it's
good
hard,
fun.
It's hard to imagine how much it must take to keep that place going.
Yes.
I mean, how many machines do you reckon they've got? 200, 300?
Yeah.
Overall?
Yeah, 300 sounds right. Maybe more, I don't know. Lots.
I struggle to kind of keep my arcade machine looking nice and working. And I've only got one, and it's got a bloody main PC in it. So.
And these are real arcade boards, all of them. And a lot of these machines are like, you know, the bespoke real machines with the...
Yeah.
Bespoke controls and everything must be managed and repaired in a certain way. I mean, it's not just Jamma machines, all these things.
Yeah, yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
it's almost overwhelming.
Yeah, it was actually. When you first go in, I didn't really know where I should start.
No. You just got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's it. Now, when I started the first day, I played all of the stuff that I knew I couldn't play at home. So stuff like three-player Ivan Iron Man Stewart with Rich and Blake, for example.
It was good fun.
Yeah, Paperboy with the real steering wheel or whatever you call that, handlebars.
Yeah,
all of those bespoke controller things. That was really good fun to have a go at.
Yeah, and the four-player racing games were an absolute classic, weren't they?
Yeah.
Daytona and Outrun 2.
Mm. Played some. I beat our in-house American in a shooting game. I mean, I beat the American in a shooting game. Yes. So I think what is there? 16 rounds in a game of point blank.
Yeah.
And I won 16-0.
Did you?
Yes. Then I the day after I challenged Jim, and we did a tie.
It was Jim quite good at that game.
Yeah, we did a tie. It was 8-8.
So how are you so good at it then?
I've been playing point blank for years. It's in the arcade. It was one of the games that my wife loved playing most.
Okay.
So when we were traveling back in late 90s, whenever we would hit a big city, we'd visit the arcades and we'd always she'd play Puzzle Bubble. She loved that. And she'd play point blank. Those were her favorite games. So we'd always play a lot of point blank. And when we got back home, I bought one of those Gun Con 45 or whatever they called for the PlayStation for her. Yeah. So we played it a lot when I was when I was young. And it's just muscle memory. I haven't played for 20 years, but you pick up that gun and you just need to get it aligned. And then here we go.
Just all comes flooding back.
Yeah, it does.
I've never played that game.
Really?
Yeah, literally. Yeah,
it's my favorite light gun game by far. I mean, it's much more fun than all of those that try to still tell you a story, House of the Dead or Time Crisis or all of that. It's just distilled fun. It just takes what is good about a light gun game into these small 5 to 15 second levels.
Yeah. I mean, it's great fun. They're great fun light gun games, aren't they? Like, there's something about just picking up like an actual plastic gun.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're in a completely safe environment and just shooting some people in the face.
Yep. Good fun.
And it's funny, we played Time Crisis on Kane and Rince earlier this year, so I spent quite a bit of time on the PlayStation 1 version. And then it was interesting then to go to Arcade Club and play it in the arcade. It's just so much different, so much better playing it in the arcade with the foot pedal.
Yeah, the foot pedal makes a difference for sure.
And the force feedback on the gun as well. Like, it's not a big thing, but it makes a big difference to how it feels.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's because I've played it. I mean, there's force feedback. There's the little click on the arcade machine point blank as well. But I actually prefer it when it's off.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because it just takes a little of your precision away.
Yeah. But more realistic, right?
Yeah, sure.
What it should have is like simulated recoil.
Yeah.
So your hand flies off every time you pull the trigger. Did you manage to play or have you played in the past? Is a silent scope the one that you look down into the scope on? Like the
I didn't actually. I saw it, but I didn't play it.
They had that downstairs near the pool table, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I walk past, there was somebody on it. But that would be a game I'd like to give a go to as well.
So what I played most was actually Ice Cold Beer. That was a fantastic game. I got to, there's 10 holes in Ice Cold Beer, and I sunk the ball in the 8th hole just before Jim and I went to the airport. So I finally got all the way up there. So I need 9 and 10, and then I can say I finished Ice Cold Beer.
What was it like on the Sunday? Was it quieter?
Yeah, it was good. It was good, actually.
Was it?
Mm.
Yeah. It was nice on the Friday evening, wasn't it? It was really quiet.
Yes, yeah. But I didn't think, I mean, the Saturday was sold out, but it wasn't too bad.
It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, and especially on the fourth floor where we like to hang out with all the old stuff, most of the kids weren't there. So,
fine. Kids are generally well behaved there. I mean, there's a few of them running around, but they're not like rampaging around, are they?
No. I didn't have any problems with it.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really one of the guys who's just joined Kane and Rince works at Arcade Club, and I told him that we all really enjoyed it. One thing that we had to leave, we had to drag Jim away to do. We did a quick playthrough recording, didn't we?
Yes.
On the Saturday. Apparently, they're trying to build they're trying to find space to build like a little podcast studio there because a lot of guys like us turn up, you know, podcasters, and they want to record a little episode. So that would be a nice little addition.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Go off and do that without having to leave.
It was hard work getting Jim away from there. So.
It was. Possibly. I think he enjoyed it in the end, but he wasn't happy, was he?
No.
The prospect of leaving. I made you go and ask him.
Mm, yep.
I wasn't brave enough to try and pull him away from Donkey Kong.
No.
Did you manage to clock any games that you've never clocked before? Was there any kind of big, or was there any kind of particular memorable high scores that you managed to land?
Yeah, well, the game we did a high score challenge on at the end, what was it, Juno 1st? Or what was the game we
played?
Forget which
I
one
only,
was,
I'd
actually.
Left by that point, but I did see the pictures on Facebook.
Was such good fun. And right now I'm blanking on what the name is. One of the old classic shoot 'em ups.
Okay.
And I had so much fun playing that game. That was really good. I really got in the zone. I set a score of, the score was going like from 40 to 60 to 80.
Yeah.
And then Donnie comes along with 119 or something like that, and we thought everything is lost. He's got the score now, and I thought I'm just gonna have one more go, and then I was in the zone, as you can be sometimes with these shoot 'em ups. Mm. It was just going and going and going. I got 277,000.
Wow, blimey! So, and that was just over the course of the day.
Yeah, that was a great game.
Every now and again, people would just kind of go and throw, just go and have a go at it, and then.
Yeah, post a picture. Yeah. I was actually thinking we should have done that on the Saturday, because that was really that was a fun way of playing the games. Mm. I had a lot of goes on Donkey Kong Jr. as well, because, well, just standing next to Jim and chatting while he was playing Donkey Kong, and I still love that game, but I'm still no good at it.
It's so difficult, that game.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Like, and Popeye was on the same little aisle there. Popeye. Great game, man. I love those.
I've actually been playing Popeye since I got home. Been playing it a little bit on my cab as well. I absolutely adore that
game. Yeah, it's a great game. You were good at it. So
we played it enough, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
A few years ago. Mm. As you say, kind of a couple of goes and your muscle memory comes back, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I love it. It gets very difficult, but I think the game is wonderful, like in short little bursts.
Yeah.
Andy and I threw about 60,000 credits into Metal Slug on the Saturday. I managed to see the credits on that. I think we did 35 credits.
On the first one? Or
on the first one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. We're playing that on Kane & Rince next month.
Okay.
So I've got the Neo Geo out behind me there.
Yeah.
And, I've managed. So we did 35 credits to finish the game. And that's like on arcade settings. So on the AES version, you can set the difficulty. It's got easy, medium, hard, and then MVS difficulty. So, of course, easy, Chris.
Okay,
set the game at easy on at home. But I can now. I can get up to... So it's got 6 levels, the original Metal Slug.
Yep.
So on easy, I can get up to level 5 without losing a life.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, reliably so as well. Reliably. Occasionally, I've thrown away. But reliably, I can get to... And then... Level 5, I pretty much lose all of my lives and all of my credits. So it gives you the way the AES version works, it gives you 3 credits.
Mm.
Obviously, you get 3 lives per credit. It's quite a nice way to do it, because if you do beat it in that way, if even though you haven't done it with 1 credit, it feels legitimate because your credits are limited.
When I was a kid, finishing Bubble Bobble on the C64 with those 10 credits you get felt like I finished the game.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't credit feed, but it's not ridiculous. So what I'd like to do, and I'm not going to have enough time to ever get good enough to do 1 credit, but what I'd like to do is kind of just see on the... I want to build up to the MVS setting and just see if I can get through the game using the kind of built-in 3 credits.
Yeah, that'd be good. But that'll be hard as well.
The game is balls tough.
Mm.
Isn't it? Like those final... I mean, I know you've played a lot of the Metal Slug games. Like... Towards the end of the game, like those last couple of levels?
Any Metal Slug game, if you ask me, the last 2 levels are unfair. I mean, the first 3-4 levels, you can teach yourself how to do those, but the last couple of levels are always just coin guzzlers. That's what they're made for.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the sunk cost fallacy, isn't it? You're standing there in the arcade, you've battled your way to the 5th stage, you want to see the end of this, and then you just keep pushing in those coins because it just throws everything at you.
I mean, I know that people can do it. And I've seen people on YouTube do it. You know, no death, 1 credit clears.
Yeah.
But sorry, you might be able to hear my dog barking. We've never done this between us whilst I have a dog.
No,
and now it's standing outside my little recording room. It can hear my voice, so it's barking.
It's part of the ambience. My dog has barked twice, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, but I think it really feels like once you get to those last couple of levels, it's like, that's enough now. It's now time to get off the machine. This is the get off the machine point.
Yep.
And you will go no further. Because it starts like the enemies are so, Andy and I were laughing just how much, you know, the game slows to about 2 frames a second at that point because there's so much going on. And everything will kill you.
I mean, I love arcade games, but this is the little thing I don't like about a lot of arcade games. It's when they do this difficulty scaling that goes pretty much linear and then it jumps in the end because, you know, because of the sunk cost fallacy, you're going to keep pushing in coins at the end because you want to see the end of it. And it makes the game not fun to play. It makes it a chore in the end. And every time I've like on emulation, just put in more credits and actually finished it, I haven't felt satisfied in any way. It's just, it's just bad game design. A lot of the shooters don't do it. I mean, they're more fair.
They'll just kick you off after 6 seconds.
Exactly, but they're fair. They don't do this crazy jump in difficulty at the end. So I prefer those, actually. If you want to go for a 1cc of an arcade game, you need to find something that's fair.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I mean, we've had this conversation many, many times, but not for a few years now. I would rather just put a credit in, see how far I can get, have fun, and then just walk away from the machine.
Yeah, me too. And that's how I played it all the time back in the day. I would never continue because I thought that would be a waste of my money.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the fun thing, right? And then on the next go, you might get to the next level, and that's really cool because then you can see what else it's got to offer. The funny thing about Metal Slug, the very end of the game is this amazing set piece where you jump on an anti-aircraft gun on a ship. And you shoot down like aircraft coming in. It's like, it's one of the best moments of the game.
Oh. But
not that many people will have seen that legitimately.
No.
I also, on the Mister, I was playing the Neo Geo CD version yesterday on the Mister. Like those loading times. And the great thing about the Mister is that, you know, it's emulating / simulating the actual hardware. Between levels, it's about 3 minutes loading. That infamously slow CD drive, wasn't it, on the Neo Geo CD?
Yeah, probably a single or double speed.
That's where the Mister's so cool, though, isn't it? You know, you can have all the versions of the game. You can just flip between them so quickly. How are you getting on with the C64?
I'm loving it, mate. The weekend after Arcade Club, I went for a small meetup here with some friends at a cottage. And I was playing, normally I bring a project, something I need to have fixed or something like that. But this time I thought, I just want to play some games. So I brought a CRT and my new C64 Ultimate and finished Musketeer and Run and Gun. Two very short games once you actually figure out how to play them. But lovely, lovely modern C64 games.
So Run and Gun, that's the one where you've got the two characters, right? Run and Gun. And you can flip between them. Yeah, I've got that.
Yeah, it's. I was actually disappointed by that. It's fun, but it's. I mean, on the first try, I finished it in like 12 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like a tech demo for something that could have been really, really good. I think Raushi said so much actually on Discord. So this could have been a really, really fun game, but it was far too easy as it was. Yeah. Musketeer, on the other hand, is something that you'll throw yourself at a handful of times and then you'll figure out, this is what's going on. And then you'll probably finish it as well in 15 minutes once you know what you're supposed to do.
What style of game is Musketeer?
It's a platformer. You are a musketeer and you need to, like the fencing in the Prince of Persia, for example, you need to fence your way past some enemies, pick up keys to open doors, and then you need to pick up all of these, I forget what they are, diamonds actually. You need to pick up 15, 16 diamonds, then you can get through the game. That's it. The story is just that somebody lost those diamonds. You need to get them back. So you need to traverse the levels, pick up those diamonds. Some of them are hidden, so you need to search for them. And you need to fight the enemies because they drop keys and other stuff that you need. So kind of simple platformer, but looks really good, plays really good, very fair as well. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's one thing that's really annoying. I've been running around the game for 30 minutes, not knowing how to get the final two diamonds until I asked one of the other guys who finished it. I said, what's going on here? He said, this is the stupid part. There is one of the walls that you can just walk through.
That's so annoying.
And right before that wall is a ladder. That is the obvious place to go when you are at that place. You do take the ladder up to the next screen instead.
So
but you know,
you're supposed to fathom that you're supposed to walk through the wall?
And there's nothing, if as far as I could tell, there was nothing on screen showing that was the case.
Yeah.
I hate that kind of game design. So that was the only flaw in the game. Really, there is one place, and if you do play this game, hit me up on Discord, because that's you need to have that spoiled for you. Otherwise, it's no good. It's not a fun game. But there's one wall you need to just walk through.
Choice.
Yeah, it is. It is weird. But if it was a thing that they introduced, hey, some walls, they maybe you can walk through them, then I would have tried it. I still don't like it. I don't like it in Dark Souls.
Trying to walk through every single wall.
Yeah, exactly. But apart from that, it was a great game, and the C64U is a brilliant machine. It feels just like the right thing. But you have all of those extra nice little things like. You can plug all your old peripherals in and your real cartridges and everything.
I was just going to say, have you tried that? Have you tried plugging in a data set?
Yes, I have, and it works. Yeah. It's great. It feels just like the C64 when you power it on, but you can't just pull... actually, you can flip the power button and go into the menu, but I just press, what is it, the Commodore and restore. Yeah. Then you go into a menu, and then you can go onto the internet to BBSs. You can... It isn't... cheating, because it's actually just emulating an old school modem. So it's going on to the internet or on the BBSs exactly like you would if you had a modem on a C64. Or you can load tape files, disk files, cartridge files, and it just works. It's a beautiful machine.
I'm extremely tempted. So as you know, I've said to myself I wasn't going to buy any hardware this year.
Mm.
We're 3 months in and I've stuck to it.
Well then.
But I'm extremely tempted by that. Yeah.
So the people I was with over the weekend there, they are Commodore nerds a lot more than me. They have everything Commodore. They have like pets and one of them was fixing an SX-64, you know, the portable C64. And they have all the Amigas and all of that stuff. But for the past couple of years... when they want to play games on them, and they love playing the old games on the C64 as well, they've been using the Ultimate, because they've had Ultimates long before this one was released, because the Ultimate was, of course, just a replacement board for an old non-working C64. So they built their own Ultimates years ago. Mm-hmm. And it is so close to the real thing that you can't feel the difference. So
that is the thing, though, isn't it? Like, if you're going to go down that road, and I love that these things exist, and it sounds amazing, it does make you think, like, why are we keeping the old hardware around when we've got, you know, because I've got 3 Commodore 64s.
Yep.
Like, if I was to get that, why do I need the old stuff?
True.
I don't need both.
So I have 3 Commodore 64s as well, but they're all different models, and I like to still play with the originals. But this is just so much more convenient right now. Yeah. And it's I don't know why, really, because... my C64 set was quite convenient as well with the SD2 IEC or IEC. Whatever it's called. And it's easy enough. I even have one of those cartridges, what was it called? The Kung Fu Flash. So you can buy CRT files on itch and play as well. Yeah. So that's pretty easy as well. But I think for me, I like to know that my old C64 is standing over here and that it still works and I can plug
it
in.
It still works.
But
Do you ever... I plugged in my Amiga 500 about 6 weeks ago, and every time I do, I'm convinced it's not going to work. Do you know what? I'm convinced. I think it probably does need a recap. I've got at the moment. I've got my Sega Saturn with a retro repair bear, and she was she didn't tell me off, but I sent my Sega Saturn to get recapped.
Yeah,
and because it was doing this thing where I switch it on and for about 10 minutes there's no video display. I don't know how I figured this out, but it's been doing it for a little while. So you switch it on and there's nothing. The power light comes on, there's no video display, but if you leave it on for about
Chris,
10 minutes
you didn't do that, did you?
And then turn it off and turn it back on again, it works perfectly.
Well, you should know that that's not a good sign. You're probably ruining it.
But this is why I've sent it off for repair. So I did a bit of Googling, and apparently it is a sign that the caps are pretty much about to blow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sent it off to Retro Repair, but she's really good. She's the lady who fixed Dean's Vectrex.
Yeah.
So she comes highly recommended.
I should have had mine. My Saturn's never been recapped, so I should have had that done at some point. But I'm now at a point where I haven't plugged in my Saturn in a few years, so I'm afraid to do so.
Yeah. Well, you might find that it's... But she said the recapping thing is the least of your worries here.
Okay.
So I bought my Saturn pre-modded with one of those Fenrir OPs.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Because I can't do stuff like that, you know. Mm. And I've got no aptitude or appetite to do it. So I bought it pre-modded, and she was just like, this is terrible. Whoever's done this, they've completely bodged it. They've put in a replacement power supply. It's terrible. It's a complete mess.
Okay.
So she said, it does need a recap. But the reason why you're having problems is probably not because of the failing caps. It's because of all this stuff.
Okay.
So she was like, look, it's going to cost you a little bit of money to basically take it all out and put it back together again. Mm. I had a look at how much it cost, about £300 to buy a pre-modded Saturn.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, go for it then. So I think she's doing it for about £160.
Okay.
Which is a lot of money for something which I use very, very irregularly.
Yep.
But I'm convinced every time especially with the computers, I'm convinced every time I plug one in that it's not going to work. Fingers crossed, you know, the Amiga 500, I plugged it in, I set it all up, fires up immediately. Perfect.
Yeah. I have two Amiga 500s, one of them recapped and with a GoTek drive, and everything is just, it has the ACA 500 plus sidecar in, as well as I can play VHD load. So that's my game playing Amiga. Yeah. But I do have an original that I haven't, that still has the right disk drive, original memory expansion, and so on. That has never been recapped, and it's still running. And I've had a look, there was a battery that leaked. I fixed that myself, actually. And then I asked one of the guys at work who knows a bit about electronics, he knows a lot about electronics, and he thought that with the kind of caps in the Amiga 500, and maybe people will be listening to this and screaming and saying, no, Mass, that's not right. But he said, if you turn it on and they don't pop, leave it on for a few hours or even more, make them work a bit. Because heating them up again will make them, because this, it had been stored in a, it was given to me by a friend, and it had been stored in a roof compartment for years. So he said, just turn it on. If it pops, quickly turn it off again. Otherwise, just leave it on for a few hours. And
so how would you know if they pop then?
You can hear it and you can smell it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but the machine would still work?
Yeah, he said that this, if you leave that on, I left it on over the night. It was standing at work, actually, running some demos. So
yeah, just hope that the office is still there when you go back in the morning. Yeah, I see. I've always been more nervous about leaving my old machines on for too long.
Mm.
Yeah, the N64 is terrible for that, because the amount of times that, I think it's the N64 that doesn't have a power light on the front. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't remember whether they do.
I'm sure it's the N64, because I had that out quite a bit back end of last year. And I get up in the morning sometimes and I think, shit, the N64 is still on. It's been on all night. Touch it, it's like really warm.
Yeah.
So get it off.
For the sake of the caps and the everything that's on the board, really, having them turned on when there are no moving parts doesn't really
it's no bad thing.
Doesn't hurt it in any way. But the PSU, of course, is another story. So if that's getting old, maybe having it on for a long time isn't that good.
Yeah, I mean, these things are getting older, aren't they?
Yeah. And for my Amigas, I don't dare use the original PSU, so I bought a new PSU for it.
Yeah, I got a new PSU as well for the Amiga. But I think I've got to the point now where I'm not really sure I'm going to replace anything. You know, if it dies, it's kind of dead. And I mean, probably the only thing I'd be inclined to replace would be the Amiga. Yeah. Just because of the nostalgia.
Yeah, that's the same for me. The C64, the C16, the Amiga, and the old DOS PC. Those are my nostalgia machines. They need to be running.
Yeah.
Finally got the DOS PC set up again with a huge new monitor that I got, again, for free, of course, Chris, because I just get stuff for free.
So you do? Yeah, you've been dump raiding again.
One of my colleagues, he was cleaning up his loft, and he had this, I don't know what it is, 19 inches, maybe.
Jesus, that must weigh an absolute
It's heavy.
Ton.
It's heavy. He said this is probably the last generation of CRT before everything went flat screen or LCD. And it has a beautiful image. The buttons don't really work anymore. So, you know, the horizontal, vertical settings and so on. You can get it done. It's a bit of a faff. So I just got it done once. And now I have this beautiful monitor for my DOS PC. I got the Roland MT32 set up. Got an old headphone amp set up as well with some input and input selector too. So I can have sound coming from my C64 or my old DOS PC.
Yeah.
And then the beautiful, beautiful sound playing. Like I was playing a bit of Monkey Island too. And
yeah.
It's a great setup.
Incredible. Yeah. We should try and revive that episode idea we had a few years back to do some DOS platformers.
True. That would be good fun.
We never did that. We were in touch with John Hupp, weren't we,
from
Retro Games Club? Yeah, that would be good to do that.
Sure.
Anything else to report?
No. I think that's pretty much it.
Next weekend, we're due to be talking about modern Game Boy games.
Yes.
Have you played that?
I haven't had any time, no. But no. What little gaming time I've had is being stolen away by a game that, I mean... You know how it is when you're playing a Souls game, right?
Yeah, because we're playing Dark Souls 3 over on playthrough.
Yes, Dark Souls 3, what a game. It's looking to be probably my favorite Souls game. Let's see. It's so good.
You know, it's funny. If we're going to let's have a little chat about Dark Souls, because this is not a retro game, but if anybody is listening to this and doesn't know, Mads and I and Jim and Andy Gilmore do a podcast called Playthrough. Where we play middle-aged and modern games in a kind of book club fashion where we split them up into parts. Most of the time, we're very good at sticking to the parts, Andy. with Dark Souls, it's a bit more difficult because something weird happens when you switch on a machine and start playing Dark Souls.
Yes.
You say to yourself, I'm just going to play for 20 minutes. I'll explore this little area. And then something weird happens to time in that it just melts away.
I'm sure there's some kind of dark hole that gets generated as soon as you load the game or something. I don't know what. I was playing it yesterday and I was so tired. I should have gone to bed. But about 10 o'clock, I was I had the choice of, am I going to go brush my teeth and sleep or just play for 10 minutes?
Just play 10 minutes,
yeah.
That's right.
And I played for 10 minutes and then it was midnight and then I got to bed.
But it can be quite a stressful game and experience, Dark Souls, because it's a difficult game, as everyone knows.
Mm.
But more so because you're generally trying to manage things that you have that you're trying not to lose, and you're trying to kind of manage where you are and stuff. But I actually find it, and I don't know, you may or may not agree with this, like when I'm playing Dark Souls, probably more so than any other game, I think of nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, I lose myself completely, 100% concentration.
Yeah, that's why time flies, isn't it? I mean, that's why we totally lose track of whether it's 10 minutes or an hour.
But I find it like a really nice way to, which sounds mad playing one of the most difficult games that have come out in recent years. I actually find it quite a nice way to de-stress from the day.
Yes. I mean, a few people have said that actually on our Discord as well, that they find it almost like mindfulness playing the Souls games. And I agree.
It's cathartic.
Yeah, I agree, but it's probably because playing the Dark Souls games, if you can play them, lots of people play them and go away and say, no, that's not for me, because they find it stressful, that it's so hard and it's so punishing. But if you can get into that mindset of just laughing when you die and say, I made a mistake again, and then get back into it, these games are beautiful and they aren't unfair. There are lots of little save points, bonfires, as they are here in Dark Souls 3, and you will progress. But you can't play it like you play other games where you think it's horrible if you have to go through the same 15 minutes again because you made some mistake. That's what this is about. I mean, you need to learn how to manage the areas, the traps, the enemies, and get good at the fighting.
Yeah.
But for me, it's just mindfulness. I sit there with the controller and I'm completely relaxed. Maybe I get sweaty hands because I'm in a boss fight.
That's a good thing, right?
But that's a good thing.
Yeah, it gives you that. It gives you good nervous tension at times, but only in that it's exciting and it's exhilarating at times.
Yeah.
But I've always said that the thing I love most about Dark Souls and Bloodborne games are not the battles. I enjoy the combat and I enjoy the bosses, But I just love creeping around the environments, poking around, unlocking little opening up little shortcuts. We've been playing these games for years now. You know, we've played, this is the fifth one that we've played. But there is something, if you include Demon's Souls, which I know we didn't do for the pod, but I think most of us have played that now. There's just every time you open a door and you get the realization, look where I am. I just never tire of it.
Yeah, and when the level loops around on itself, you open the door and you go, oh, I'm back here. It's just lovely.
And then you know you've got a shortcut then from that when you do die, and you will have earned that because you will have battled through a load of enemies together. Mm. And then you know that when you do die, and you will, of course you will, like your route back to where you are to move forward now is so much shorter.
So you've got a classic example of that coming up, maybe. I know how far you are, and very soon, when you need to get to the next area away from the settlement where you are right now, there's a little skill check, and it's right before the next area.
Gives you nothing for free, does it?
No.
You've got to earn absolutely everything. It's a wonderful game. And so somehow I've played it for 12 hours now.
Okay.
I've no idea. Seb, my lad, who's now 15, for people who've not listened to us talk for a long time, he's playing it alongside us, which is cool. He's kind of keeping track with me.
Okay.
So he's 7.5 hours in.
Yeah.
And he was laughing at me because we were looking at my game clock, which is about 5 hours more than him, and we're at exactly the same place. But that's how I play these games. Like I walk everywhere, creeping around. And the hours have just melted away. I have no idea how I've spent 12 hours on it.
But you like the exploration very much. So that's something you're slow and meticulous when you do that. I love that as well. I've only played like 10 hours, I think, but it's a beauty.
If I see a little glowing orb, I cannot move on until I've figured out how to get to it.
Yep. There's one I had to leave, actually. I didn't figure out. There's some one I'm sure you have to jump there just at the right point. It's later on in the game for you that I'm going to have to get back to.
Yeah, that eats away at me. There's a few that are hanging at the undead settlement, aren't they? Like they're hanging on corpses. And I didn't have. So I had a bow and a crossbow, but I didn't have any bolts or arrows in my inventory. No, that was me going back to the bonfire, warping back to the area, buying some, and going right way back again.
Yeah,
cannot move on until I've got it.
Nope, true.
No, it's a great game, and I'm looking forward to playing more. So if I'm sure most people listening to this are aware of what we're up to on playthrough, but if you want to come and join in, we've got our own Discord server over there.
Yeah,
hit us up and we'll let you have the deets. So mate, let's thank our Patreons. We haven't done that for a long time.
Oh, we need to get into that.
And you can't rely on the other lot to do this, can you?
Oh, it's good we've got the A-team back.
That's it. Take our patrons for granted, all that lot, because they never thanked them. No, of course they don't. But, you know, the A-team are back. We're professionals, right? We're doing it properly.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a long list nowadays.
It is. It is. We're going to take turns as we used to do.
We got to, haven't we? That's good. Got to do it that way. Do you want to go first?
Sure. So the first one is, for me, a new one, and that may mean that this guy's been here for a long time because I haven't been on for a long time. So Forge.
Forge. Good game, that.
Yeah. Did you play it, actually?
Yeah. The fan made?
Yeah,
fan
it was game? Really good. It was really good. So sad to see that they didn't get to actually finish it. Somebody should have funded that.
Did you see the look at us?
Yeah. So talking about it, Forge is of course the fan sequel to Loom because Loom was supposed to be a trilogy with the Loom, Forge, and Fold. They were supposed to be called, right?
Yeah. So the guy who it was an Italian guy, wasn't it? Who did Forge?
I think so. Yes. Mm.
So I found a forum post, I think, from about 2018 where someone was kind of badgering him a little bit, saying, "Oh, you're going to finish it." He kind of came back with a bit of a verbal rocket. You know.
Okay.
So I suspect we're not going to see the finished version of that game. No. I mean, so I assume that's kind of locked away in Disney's cupboard somewhere.
Must be. And I'm sure I've been looking for them for years because at some point on the internets, I saw that, who made Loom right now? It's...
Brian Moriarty.
Brian Moriarty, yeah. Moriarty, he published The design document that what was actually already made that described both Loom, Forge, and Fold, and what he like in rough the rough idea of what he wanted to do with those three games. I've always been wanting to find that again because it's.
I remember seeing that, so I think that might have been reproduced in Retro Gamer years and years ago.
Okay. I need to get my hands on that issue because, they were already planned, and I guess now they belong to Disney, those documents. So,
yeah, and I think, Brian, remember when we did Loom, or was it when we did the Wishbringer? It may have been. I remember I emailed him.
Yeah.
And he was unwell, and that was years ago now.
Yes.
So I hope he is well, and best wishes to him. Mm. But yeah, they're very good games. Anyway, second name. Guy Sims, also known on Discord as MDKJew.
Yes, and we've got Richard Hyde.
Hey, Rich. Roger Swan.
Plastic Man.
Stephen James.
Robert Ewart.
Pete Rogers.
Rune Pete.
New Game Old Flame podcast.
Yeah, great podcast, by the way. If you don't, then go listen to it. It's about new games for the old computers and consoles. All the 8 and 16-bit stuff.
And they are still going, aren't they?
It seems they
have been a bit irregular recently. But
like us, they've been busy, and now they're back at it. So, they are still going for sure.
Good lads.
We've got Christopher Bolton.
Dylan Darch.
And Bitmapsoft.
Mike's Vintage Tech.
Nick.
Howard Price.
Matthew Turner.
Adam Hind.
Our very own Chris O'Regan is still on here.
Yeah. James Dunn.
And we've got Hans, or Muppets4, on the Discord.
Loshi MSX.
Guto Threadbear.
Chris Atwill.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Tim TJ Walker.
Ricardo Engel.
Heavy Metal Dawn.
Dr. No Vocal Cords.
Mel Woods.
The Kane and Rince Podcast.
Yet another podcast. Lampton Worm.
Mitsuyama.
And Riswin.
Clint Humphrey.
And Mark is here as well. Mark and Chris, stop paying yourself stuff.
Yeah. You're putting in the work, lads.
Yeah.
Clint didn't come to Arcade Club. That's a shame. You would have been, you would have liked, well, you will like Clint. I'm sure you'll meet him in future, but he's a good guy. He was obviously busy. Paul Ashton.
And John Shepard.
Laurent Giroux.
Aaron Maupin.
Jim Orbitz IT.
And my arch nemesis, John Veal.
Thomas Goffin.
Lauren.
Andrew Gilmore. Gilmore, of course.
Yes. Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Nick Lees.
And the OG.
Blake
Brett.
Yes. Thanks a lot, you guys. It means a lot, the little, whatever little or much you chip in. It's keeping the lights on here, so that's good.
Yeah, the flavor of Retro Asylum, you know, if you look back over the years, changes, doesn't it, from time to time? You know, if you look back, and the podcast has been going for so long now.
Yeah.
I mean, Dean is really old.
Yes, yes.
He was like, he was 50 when he started it.
We had to put him to bed at about 9 at the arcade.
He starts dribbling. Yeah. But like the flavor changes from time to time, and it's changed a little bit since, you know, it's gone a little bit more down the video route since we were in our pomp doing our game club. We're bringing it back down to earth a little bit, aren't we? You know, all this video nonsense.
Yeah, face made for radio, mate.
Yeah, this is it. But no, the patrons who've been with us through thick and thin and the more recent ones, we are ever so grateful, eternally grateful for all that you do. So thank you very much. And if you want to support us and you don't already, www.patreon.com and just search Retro Asylum. And throw us a quid or two. It helps. Mate, but Chip's Challenge then.
Yes. My favourite Atari Lynx game.
Yeah. So I'm responsible for this, as I said. I was the one who suggested. And so this is a game that I've been aware of for many, many years. A game I've always wanted to give a really good go.
Yeah.
It's been on the Evercade for a long time now with the Atari Lynx Collection 1. And Evercade is a plan. I'm always looking at my Evercade thinking, I don't use that enough. Don't use, like a lot of things. Yeah. Don't use it enough. I need to use it more. And I recently got the Turrican Collection for it as well, which is very good.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's a platform I should use more. So I thought, well, I've missed doing the, and this is not a return of the Game Club. This is a Game Club style episode.
Mm.
But I've missed these episodes. This is what I really enjoy, focusing on a game, having a chat about it. This is my bag, this.
Yeah, me too.
So I thought, well, new year, let's have a crack. Let's see how it feels to pick a game and have a chat about it. Coupled with the fact that it was a game I've always wanted to play, I knew you liked it. It's on the Evercade. All of that kind of came together, and I thought, right, let's have a chat about Chip's Challenge. Mads, what is Chip's Challenge?
So Chip's Challenge is a... When you started, you think it's a block-pushing puzzle game, really, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, to be fair.
So it is a puzzle game, but it's very action-oriented in like half of the levels as well. We'll get into more detail about that. You can only move left or right or up and down, and whenever you push a button for a direction, he'll move an entire tile. So it's a tile-based game, and then we just have square tiles, right? And you need to figure out how to pick up the chips. So he's called Chip, and he wants to pick up computer chips. And when he's picked up enough computer chips, the exit will open. It's like a portal that starts glowing. Yeah. You can enter the exit and go to the next level. And of course, it isn't as easy as that. You'll need to be pushing blocks around, traversing ice and fire and water and conveyor belts, and make sure you don't run into foes and... lots and lots of stuff. What makes this game fun is the variety in all of the tiles and all the pickups that you need to figure out how to do. And of course, there are in the old fashion of those kind of games, colored keys as well. So you find a red key for the red door and a yellow key for the yellow door and so on. So it's a puzzle game. It's a great one of that. The story is that Chip wants to join the Bitbusters Club because he wants to impress... I forget what she's called, but he wants
Melinda.
To... Yes, Melinda.
The mental marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't sound like a good thing.
No.
If I called someone a mental marvel, I'd expect a slap in the face.
Yeah. I think looking at the levels that she set up for him to pass through and be killed in, she may be kind of mental. But he needs to traverse 149 levels before he can actually enter the Bitbusters Club and... Have a bit of fun with Melinda, I guess.
She better be worth it.
Yeah, she better be.
It's a lot of levels, isn't it?
It is. But of course, the story is just nonsense and not something you need in this game. This is a simple pick up and play puzzle game.
Yeah,
it's simple, but it's hard. So
yeah, and that's exactly what Wikipedia says. The premise of the game is that high school nerd Chip McCallahan has met Melinda, the mental marvel, in the school science lab and must navigate through Melinda's clubhouse. What a devil!
Yes.
What a devil. A series of increasingly difficult puzzles. I'll take issue with that in a little while.
Yes.
In order to prove himself and gain membership to the very exclusive Bitbusters Club.
So I love Chip's Challenge, but if there's one thing you just hinted at right there, if there's one thing that doesn't work in it, it's the difficulty curve.
It doesn't have one.
No, it's all over the place. And some levels are infuriatingly hard, while the next one can be just a complete pushover.
Yeah, and that's a symptom of the fact that it wasn't designed by a single person, or it wasn't even really designed in a coherent way. It was a bunch of people designing a bunch of levels that were just put together.
If they'd made it 50 levels and 50 well-designed levels, it would have been a better game for it, for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And we'll talk about some of our kind of favorite and least favorite levels that we can remember in a little while, but... It's a lot. This game is a lot.
Yeah.
And it not only is the difficulty, and this is my opinion, not only is the difficulty curve or lack of all over the place, but I think the quality is as well.
Yeah, you're right.
For me, I think there's some really, really great levels. And for me, there's some not so great. But I suppose it depends on what kind of levels you like, and we'll talk about some of the kind of different themes in a sec.
Yeah, I think for that, it's really telling, actually. I've been playing this since the 90s. I love this game. I've never finished it, even though I love this game. I've actually never been as far as I got this time, and I'm only at around level 50.
Yeah, yeah. And that's 45 was my exit point, and I'll talk about why in a minute.
Yeah. I think I know which one that is then. But I mean, I got to... through like a third of the game, even though I love it. And that's because at some point you put it down because you're frustrated.
Yeah,
so it's such a shame, because as we'll get into very soon, this is a great puzzler when it's good. So it's such a shame that...
It does give you the option to skip a level.
It does, yes.
But it only gives you that option once.
Yeah, that's what I saw as well. And it does it too early when you haven't really given up yet.
Yeah. It does it after about like two or three failed attempts.
Yeah.
It should do it like every 10 failed attempts.
Yeah.
Because there are some levels I would have skipped for sure.
It's a game that's good to pick up now. Because picking it up on the Evercade, using the save states liberally in the levels that you don't really like,
we that's don't the do way. That though, do we, mate?
Oh, I have for sure.
We're not Jim.
I have for sure in I think I started in the level. Let's see when we get there. Probably the level you stopped at, because that's a very action oriented and very annoying level.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to go through the motions of doing the same, very mind-numbingly boring once you figured out what to do.
Yeah.
Actions over and over
just
again
through the process.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's what the Evercade version does add. Of course, is the save states for
me. The Evercade is probably where I will finally, at some point, finish this game because I've never done so. Even though I love the game and I've started it so many times, and this could be the place to finish it instead.
And I suppose the good thing is about the lack of any kind of difficulty curve is that there's no real harm in putting it down for a few weeks and then picking it back up because you haven't really got to rely on previous learnt knowledge.
No.
You are as going in as cold as you would be. Okay, the first sequence of levels are tutorials. So yes. The first 10 are various tutorials.
Mm.
The game's not complicated. You don't. No. I mean, you need to know what the various icons do, I suppose. But it's not.
Let's lay down the law, then, mate. I mean, you have Chip that you control. Yeah. He's moving around. You have these different tiles, and they're like concrete tiles that you can walk on.
Yeah.
You can walk on them, and monsters can walk on them too. That's an important distinction. You have dirt tiles, and on the dirt tile, if you walk on it, it turns into a concrete tile.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, the monsters can move there as well. That becomes actually in the level I'm at right now, which is, I think, level 50. That's the whole thing. You need to, there are monsters that are, monsters will always stick to the sides unless they bump into each other. Then they'll go into the middle of the open spaces. But otherwise, they'll stick to the sides of the open spaces.
Yeah.
So you need to, there are monsters guarding every single chip, just running around it in a circle. And you need to make some space for them to walk into so you can actually go and get at the chips.
Yeah, so you need to kite them away from the chip using the path that you create.
And then what else we got? We got water tiles. If you walk into a water tile, there are some special pickups I'll get to later on. But if you walk into a water tile, you die
Death.
Immediately. There are fire tiles. If you walk into those, you die. If you push a rock tile onto a water tile, it turns into a dirt tile that you can then walk on, turning it into a concrete tile, and then you can go.
Yeah.
Past that point, of course, that's a big that's actually the first puzzle, isn't it? Doing that, I think.
Yeah.
And then you
have so much that it's hard to, I can't remember where it starts.
Then you, as I said initially, when you control Chip, you press once to the right, he'll go one tile to the right, but we also have ice tiles.
Yeah.
And I like how these work because normally in computer games, ice is hard to control and hard to understand exactly what's going on. This is easy.
Yeah.
It just means if you're standing on ice and you press right once, he'll keep going right until he hits something or there's nothing more or he dies, I guess. So it's slippy and you can't control it. You can't stop. Once you press right, he'll be going right until something in the level stops him.
Yeah, it's almost like a conveyor, isn't it, the way it works.
But
you can manipulate that conveyors are another type of tile.
Yes, exactly.
But you can manipulate direction on conveyors to some extent.
Yeah. And then there are conveyor tiles, of course, as you said, that just go in some direction. So and you can try to work against them, but you'll still slowly be going in that direction.
Yeah, and there's levels based around. There's one in particular that I can't remember which one, which is basically a whole level of various conveyors.
Yes.
Which I really hated. It's like some kind of acid trip.
That's the one that also has teleports, right?
Yes, there are teleports in it.
You have teleports as well? Teleports, for the longest time, when I got really stuck, it was because I didn't understand teleports completely. Teleports are directional. If you enter a teleport from the left, the exit will be somewhere else than if you enter it from the right or from the top or from the bottom. So that's part of the puzzles, and that makes it actually quite good fun once you figure out what's going on.
Yeah, well, although it kind of blows my mind because there's one level where you've got chips in like four different corners of the map and you've got four teleport and one in the center, and it's all about which direction you enter. The middle teleport will.
There are two teleports in the middle in that level. That's the one I got stuck at for ages until I finally figured it out, and then it was great. Then I felt clever for figuring out what was going on.
That's the one that you were talking about for quite a while on Discord.
Yes,
like level 20 or 25 or something like that.
I got completely stuck. I just
stuck for ages.
Didn't understand probably what was going on. But that's teleports for you there. You've got buttons as well, of course, because what puzzle game hasn't got buttons that you just walk over and then activate something, open a door, whatever. Something happens in the level. And I think that's it for tiles probably, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't count doors and keys.
Yeah, doors and keys. You pick up four different colors of keys to open four different colors of doors. And then you have your power-ups. So you can pick up a shield with a fire shield, but that will make you impervious to fire, so you can walk over the fire tiles. The same for water. That means you can swim through the water. You just walk over it. You can pick up some, spiked shoes?
Yeah, cleats, aren't they?
Yeah. So you can walk on ice without slipping. And you can pick up a magnet. That makes you stand still on the conveyors, so you can walk on the conveyors without walking in the direction that they do.
Yeah,
and then you have monsters that you need to avoid, and the monsters they're quite quick. They move quite quickly, and they always stick. Either they stay on that path that they've been started at in the middle of an open space, or they will, if they have their own free will, walking around, they will walk around the edges of rooms.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And the puzzles are based around all of those things. Levels have a mixture of all. Some will focus on literally avoiding monsters, collecting chips.
Those are the worst.
Yes, they are the worst. In fact, you know, I think this game is at its worst when you are not really solving puzzles, when you are just running around the environment.
Yeah.
Particularly the link. I mean, we're jumping around as we always do.
Yes.
This was a launch title for the Atari Lynx, published by Epyx. It was seen as a system seller back when it was released. It was very, very highly rated in the Atari press and the games mags at the time.
One of the very few games that I have for my Atari Lynx.
Yeah, I've got it as well.
Yeah, it's good.
And I think I've only got three games for the Atari Lynx.
Yeah, me one too. That, California Games and APB, I think.
Yeah, it was... He designed... Chuck Somerville is the... was the designer or the principal kind of designer of the game. As I said, these levels, he designed a third of the levels. One third were designed by a guy called Bill Darra, who was a games designer within Epyx. And then other levels were designed by just a mixture of Epyx staff. Anyone who wanted to submit a level basically could do. I don't know whether there was any kind of editorial control exercise by Chuck. I assume it was. But this is why it can feel... quality and difficulty wise a little bit all over the place because a load of different people were submitting levels into for the game. It's probably though more famous, I would say, for being a PC game.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was racking my brain earlier to figure out when did I play this first, and I'm pretty sure it was the Lynx version for me.
Was it?
Even though it was released for the C64 in 90 and for the Amiga as well in around 90, 91.
It got an Amiga release,
So I mean, I would just have gotten my Amiga around then. I would still be playing a bit on a C64. So I should have seen it there. But I was looking on YouTube at some videos just to see if I could jog my memory, and it doesn't ring a bell at all. Neither does the DOS version or Windows version. So I think for me, it's always just been an Atari Lynx game, really.
So the Windows 95 version is when I first played it.
Okay.
So it was when I first got my PC. It was a Windows 95 PC, and it came with a pack of games. Another one was like a Pipe Mania kind of game.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
and they were known as the best of Microsoft Entertainment Pack. And I didn't realize that previous versions of Windows had got these Microsoft Entertainment Packs.
Okay.
With various games. This was actually part of Microsoft Entertainment Pack 4 and came bundled with a version of Windows 3.1 in 1992.
Okay.
It then got the re-release for Windows 95 as part of this compilation of the best of the Microsoft Entertainment Pack games.
Yeah.
And that's when I remember messing around with it on Windows 95, just like the novelty. You just want to click on everything and see what everything does.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have played it that much, but I definitely remember. It looks terrible, the PC version, I think.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, now if you look at if you look at the PC version on YouTube, it really looks horrible. It's jerky scrolling. The way he moves is really not very nice.
For me, the only version that really looks good is the Lynx version.
But, yeah, I think the Lynx version looks really good. Yeah. The thing that holds the Lynx version back, as opposed to the PC version, is the view screen, especially on the more action orientated levels.
Do you have a larger play area on the DOS versions? So you see more tiles at the time?
Yeah, you do see more tiles.
That would be a game changer for sure.
Yeah, it does, and it impacts the way you play because that the amount of lives I lost because a snake is running at me off the screen, I didn't see it.
Some levels would be broken by that. I mean, there's a level, for example, where you need to reach the middle of a lake and you can't see the middle of the lake and you don't know that you're supposed to reach the middle of the lake. So you have to do it trial and error wise, trying to build those bridges and see, I can get there and then I need to start from that starting point.
Yeah.
If you could see more so you actually knew where you were going, that level would be trivial.
How many times on that level did you accidentally walk into the water having spent 15 minutes building?
I was just about to say 50 times. a lot of times.
So easy to do, isn't it? Because as you said earlier, one tap direction and he moves a whole tile.
Yeah.
It's so easy just to hit the wrong direction and have him walk into the water.
And if you're continuously walking, if you hold down right, he'll just say, take a step. And I feel that you need to release it when he's taking the final step. Not while he's moving.
So what I was doing on that level is just one press at a time and having him just move one little square.
That's what I ended up doing because I went into the water so many times building that bridge.
So that level, I did use in-level save states.
I didn't actually. I hadn't given up yet at that point.
That is good. Because every time I got a chip, because the chips are kind of dotted around on little islands, aren't they? And you have to build the bridge from island to island. Every time I got a chip, I'd save state.
Okay.
And I think it was a few weeks ago, but I'm pretty sure that once I started doing that, I didn't fall into the water.
Okay.
But I think it was because I wasn't sweating so much because I knew I had the fallback of the save state. But I remember it more as a Windows game for sure. I don't think I spent any great amount of time playing it. I've always had it in my head that it was a Sokoban style game, as we said at the start, but it really isn't. I mean, there are elements of block pushing, but it's not. There are fewer puzzles based around block pushing than there are puzzles based around block pushing.
Yes.
Most of the levels aren't based around that at all.
No.
Chuck Somerville, then, he did Summer Games 2 for Epics as well.
Yes.
He was also a designer on California Games. Mm. He designed some of the mini games for that. He also designed some levels for Gauntlet, the Third Encounter. And since really leaving Epics, he's been a one-man mission to release more Chips Challenge content. he was for a long time was in dispute with the company that somehow ended up acquiring the rights to Chips Challenge. He designed Chips Challenge 2 a long time ago, but it wasn't able to be released until 2015. So the game was complete in 1999, and I think he'd spent a couple of years working on it. But he couldn't release it because he couldn't get the rights to do so.
Okay.
And it was only until it wasn't in 2015, Chips Challenge got a Steam release alongside Chips Challenge 2.
Mm.
So if you like Chips Challenge, there is a whole, not only is there loads of user creator content, there is a massive community around this game.
There is a level editor for it as well in some versions, right?
Yeah. And there are almost infinite number of user created levels available online. Yeah, if you really like this game, and some of them are fiendish, like the community, because this game has a score system as well, which is based on how quickly you can get through the level.
Yeah.
Some of the community stuff online is how they break it down to get the quickest possible time, and they're talking about kind of frames and how you can manipulate, particularly on the PC version. Okay. I think you can manipulate how Chip moves to just shave fractions of a second off. It really is something else.
Yeah.
You know, and this stuff is still going on. People are still finding quicker ways. You're less able to do it on the Lynx because you have this fixed movement. But I think on the PC, there is a little bit more you can do to manipulate how he moves.
Okay.
Which means you can just get through slightly quicker. Something to do with how he moves like half a block at a time as opposed to one full square.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, there is terminology going on in the Chip Challenge community that is way above my head. he also released Chuck's Challenge 3D. That was a Kickstarter title, and it was a launch title for the NVIDIA Shield. That was in 2014, and that's basically a 3D version of Chip Challenge. It looks horrendous, but I'm sure it plays really well. He credits himself as Puzzle Master on Chip Challenge 2. I think he designed the game on his own. Yeah, it was ported to all the usual 8 and 16-bit micros. It got that Steam release, and it also came out on the Nintendo Switch.
Really?
2024.
Wow.
Which I think it is the Lynx version. I had a look at a couple of screenshots. It looks like the Lynx version. It's like $1.99 on the Switch.
So if Chip's Challenge 2 is actually done by one man, could have the right balancing in the puzzles.
Yeah, it might be a better game for it as well. Hmm. It took him... I mean, they did Chip Challenge in 10 weeks. That's 148 levels in 10 weeks.
So I understand why the balancing is a bit off, because they must have had everybody and the intern building levels for it.
Throwing levels in 10 weeks, man. That's a lot to do in 10 weeks. It took him about 2 years to do Chip's Challenge 2. So maybe there is a kind of a level of refinement there that is missing for the first game.
Building these kinds of puzzle levels is a lot harder than you think. I built a Game Boy game, exactly. Built the engine for a Game Boy puzzle game that is grid-based like this one, tile-based. And I had everything ready to build something like this in a single-screen fashion. But then actually being creative and building fun levels, that just took me so long that, I stopped the project.
that's the bit that is, I imagine... It's really difficult. I mean, I'm not very creative at all, but I imagine kind of building the engines, like the technical bit.
Mm.
But to actually build, it's 144 levels here, as we've said. 148 if you get, so the 144 you get credits.
Yeah.
Apparently. And then you have to know the passwords to get the secret 4.
I think there's 149 according to...
Well, 149 on the PC, there's an extra secret level on the PC. Mm. So the PC version has an extra, for some random reason, has an extra level. But that, I mean, to create that many different puzzles is, I don't even know how you'd even contemplate it.
No.
I mean, to build like the quality and variety. And this is why I think we found that there is a, I didn't like the levels that involved you having to be chased by enemies.
No,
because I didn't think the view screen really supported it.
And actually, there's different things that they sometimes ask you to do. I mean, sometimes there's a row of enemies can be different things. They're the bugs that are running around, the teeth and the walkers and so on. Teeth. But there's also fireballs that just fly past. There are tanks that will shoot at you. They just drive back and forth and then they shoot at you. So you have to be careful there as well. But the ones I hate most are the bugs the blobs or the little thingies. If they would just stick to the edges all the time, so you'd feel like it was predictable where they were, because they move quite fast, that would be okay. Then there'd still be some times where you need to get through a flock of bugs and you have like 3 frames and that's your window. I can almost live with that. But the fact that when two bugs bump together, they just go off in a different direction, and then suddenly they're in your space. The safe space of the level that's not at the edges is not safe anymore when that happens.
Yeah.
That is so annoying, because it just feels so random to me that I can't control it. And dying like that actually annoys me.
Yeah, so frustrating. Like there's one level where there must be about 80 chips on it, and some of them around the edge, and then within like each section there is like, it's like a grid of pathway.
Mm.
But you have to kind of go into each little zone to pick up more chips. And within each zone, there is a mixture of different enemies.
And you let them out.
You have to run through the danger zones to pick up the chips. Yes. And as you say, because these things are moving what feels like quite randomly, you can never quite predict whether or not you're safe.
And once you enter their zone, you've opened the door for them to come after you again. Yeah. So in the end, you'll be corralling like a huge amount of enemies around just to get the final chips, right?
Yeah. Level 10 has it, and some of the levels are just straight up mazes. So level 10, for instance, is a maze that is done by fire. There's like little fire tiles that create the maze, and you have to pick your way through. That's fine. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of mazes, but fine. You know, if you're kind of going through, you're collecting the chips, I have no real problem with that. The problem with that is as soon as you go the wrong way, it will throw an enemy at you. So, and whilst that level then, it's still doable with the enemy chasing you. Well, for me, if I'm doing a maze, the fun thing is, okay, well, I'll go this way and I've reached the dead end. That's all right. Then I'll retrace my steps and I'll try a different way. As soon as you do that, you're then being chased, and it makes the whole thing, A, much more difficult, but B, really stressful.
Yep.
Because you've got a thing on your tail.
But it feels like a lot of these levels, they do that to kill you so that you can start over and then you learn the correct way of doing it. And that's how this a lot of these action-oriented levels feel. And some of the puzzle levels as well, you can do stuff in the wrong order and lock yourself out of the solving the puzzle.
Yeah.
So easily.
In fact, I would say most levels are like that. Yeah. You can do things in the wrong order. The good thing is you can start the level, it restarts immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no drama, really. I think you just hit start, don't you, or something. You hit a button and you can just kill it yourself and just restart. Yeah,
you're there a fraction of a second later and then you can just restart. It's it's easy peasy. I really like the levels that use a lot of the different pickups and mechanics.
They're my favorites as well.
Yeah, levels that where you have to deal with water, ice, fire, conveyors, and some buttons and pick up the right colored keys. Not a lot of monsters.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I like.
Or if there are monsters, they're the ones that just have the defined paths.
Yeah.
And some you might have to push a block in front of them to kind of
cut off their path. Yes. Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. There is one. So the one I'm thinking of that you've just mentioned, there is one which has basically all of the power-ups in.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to pick it is a bit of trial and error, but you have to pick them up in the right order.
Yes.
So you have to, you know, you start off, you can pick up the cleats. You can then go on the ice. You can then go and pick up the fins so you can go in the water.
Yeah. It's the one with the teleports as well. Whenever you're in different corners of the map when you pick up the different pickups, and then you enter a teleport and then you go somewhere else and do something. And you need to enter those teleports from the right side so that you actually do it in the right order. For
example. That's it.
Yeah.
Like that love is that probably, of the ones I can remember, it's probably my favorite level because it feels like you can go wrong.
It took me a lot of goes before I actually got it right.
But then when you do get it right, and it's about piecing it all together, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, well, I know that bit. There's a level called Lemmings.
Yeah.
Where you've got, defined paths until they hit something or hit another one where they then spill off. And then you've got a pool that if the enemies fall in there, they will die as well. So you've got these enemies on these set paths, and really what you have to do is you have to put a block in their way to divert them and try and divert them either to a place where you're not going to be, where the chips are, or into the pool.
Yeah.
And it's got that it's got this sound effect when the enemies, that like a popping effect, like sound, hasn't it?
Mm.
So you can be off screen and you just hear this pop, 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 pop. And you know, like lemmings going into an exit, the baddies are going into the pool and dying.
Yeah.
And then you've got another section where there's another lot of enemies doing the same thing, and you end up with enemies just flying everywhere. And because the view screen is really small, you can think you've done it, and then an enemy comes from nowhere and just goes straight into you. That took me ages to figure out that one.
If we're talking specific levels, the one that had me starting to use the save states all the time was Monster Lab, if you remember that one.
What happens with that one?
So that's one of those.
It's the one where that was the level I stopped at.
Okay. Yeah. So there's lots of enemies coming, and some of them you need to push blocks in front of so you can go.
They're constantly spawning, right?
Yes, constantly. Yeah. There's like five different places in the level where there are generators of enemies. So you need to, some of them you need to push blocks in front of to block their way, and then you need to pick up some keys and do all of the fun stuff. And there's water, there's fire as well here. There's a conveyor. You need to do, and buttons and so on. Everything needs to be done just right for the puzzle to work out. But at the same time, you need to balance a horde of monsters.
Mm.
And there is one or two places in the level where there's just, it feels like with one tile between them, enemies coming out. And you need to walk through that because you haven't got anything you can push in front of them. So you need to just pass them to push a button or something like that. And that would kill me so many times. And then I had to go back to the start and do all of the busy work of going up, pushing a block in front of that line of enemies, going over there, pushing a block around to pull, to put it into the water, new block. There's one of the tiles actually is a block generator. I think we forgot to say that. So you can generate granite blocks that you That's push right. into water. Those, there are lots of those here as well. And those are the ones that takes the most time yeah. to use, because often they'll want you to generate five blocks and put them the right place so you can.
Because you have to build yourself a little place that you can actually change the direction.
Exactly.
You?
Yeah. And this is one of the levels where you really need to do that. And that means that the first, I feel like, 5 minutes is just doing that, yeah. all of that yeah. busy work. Same and when you then die 7 minutes in and have to do yeah. it all over again and again and again. So in the end, I safe stated that every time I did something when I thought, this is now I'm in a safe place. I've got the pickups I need. There's no error, because of course you can't lock yourself out, as we said. But when I felt safe that I hadn't made an error early on in the stage, I safe state and then go to the next part.
I couldn't really work out what I was meant to be doing on that one, or where, because there was, I think in the south west of the level is where the exit is, isn't it? Surrounded by fire, if I'm remembering
yes,
correctly.
Yes, that's true.
I kind of worked out that I needed to do things. I needed to stop all the other generators before. I just could not fit. I mean, I could have looked at YouTube. You could even just look up the passcode and skip the level, but what's the point if you're going to do that?
Yeah.
I was getting quite frustrated. This is a game, I think, that really benefits from just little short bursts.
Mm.
Pick it up, do a few levels, wait until you get stuck, put it down for a bit.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, oh, yeah, I need to go back to that. Maybe that's what I'll do, you know, after we've now chatted and it's kind of come back into my mind.
Yeah, embrace the safe states for a game like this. I mean, it's of its yeah. time, and if you only had that to play, it would be fine to throw yourself at it for, I think you'll need probably 100 hours to finish this game. But now, these days, embrace the safe states. It's a great game with safe states. Even that level became bearable with safe states, and it wasn't easy even using safe states, because, as you say, it's hard to figure out what are the designers, what do they want me to do here?
Yeah. The coloured keys, though, like, I love those levels. If a level comes up and straight away you can see there are coloured doors or coloured keys, I'm like, right, I'm in my element here.
Yeah.
Like, where does that come from? I reckon, you know, even playing the likes of Alien Breed or Doom,
yeah.
I really like just going around, ooh, that's a blue door, I need to go and collect a blue key.
I really like the color-coded ones. In Alien Breed, they weren't color-coded. You just had a key, and then sometimes you'd have one key and two doors, and opening one of the doors would be an error, and the other would lead to something good. Yeah,
it's just that little kind of going around the level, oh, look, there's the key. How, you know, what buttons do I need to press to stop the enemies coming to, so I can pick up that key?
Yeah.
Like, if this game had 40 levels that were of that theme.
Yeah, with the fire, water, and the ice, and and the keys, yes, and teleports and conveyors, yeah.
Do you remember the one where there was loads of teeth everywhere, and you had to run and get there were loads and loads of chips, but you had to go in, there was like a line of teeth, because the enemies can't move beyond the chips either, can they? So as soon as you take a chip, you free them.
Yeah.
But you had to like remove the chip, and the enemy was like one tile away.
Mm.
And it would feel like half of the time the enemy would not come into your tile, and half of the time it would. Mm. It just felt like so random.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those deaths are the things that ultimately will make you turn this game off.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it can just get really, really frustrating.
Yeah. And it doesn't always, even though it is a puzzle game, and even, you know, tile based, everything is down to a clock step, it doesn't always seem fair.
No.
Especially with those monsters when they bump into each other or stuff like that. It doesn't always seem fair. I mean, maybe it's just because we're not skilled enough at Chip's Challenge, but I don't want to be skilled enough to control those monsters. I just want to solve some puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think puzzle games, I think, less is more sometimes as well.
Yeah.
Although, stick a flag in that, because we're going to talk about this Game Boy game next weekend.
Okay.
And I've got... Yeah, I'm going to completely contradict what I just said there. But
because you want more?
What I think Morpin was talking about I was reviewing, because we had a bit of Discord chat when we were playing this game, and I think he was talking, and I think it's a good point about how sometimes like puzzle games, they in a way to kind of add length to the game, they just, rather than kind of come up with clever ways to kind of within a certain rule set, they just expand the rule set.
Mm.
So they will just bigger, more and bigger, you know, rather than smaller and clever.
Yeah.
And he cites Baba Is You, which I've never played, but I've always thought looked amazing.
Baba Is You is wonderful, but again, it could be shorter. I haven't finished it because at some point I just got fatigued playing it, but it is you need to play it, mate. It is a wonder.
I would love to play it. Yeah.
It's a game about bending the rules, about building the own rules, your own rules, so that you win the level. And it is brilliant. I mean, the idea of conceiving that game is fantastic. So,
but in order for it to get, I mean, especially back in the day when this is a launch title for the system, right? In order to have like commercial viability, it needed to be of a certain length.
Yeah.
You couldn't just throw out, you know, a game like this, you throw out like 30 great levels, it'd be 30 great levels. For us coming at it 30, 40 years later, we're grateful for the fact that we don't have to spend 100 hours to get through it.
Yeah.
But if you've just got your Link Zone with this amazing chip challenge that got 89% in whatever magazine, and by the evening, this brand new Links you've got, you're done with it because the game is finished, then that's a problem, isn't it?
That's true.
You've got some explaining to do to your mum and dad as to why you're not playing on this thing that they've just bought you, like you with your Super Mario Land.
Yeah, exactly.
Game Boy.
No, but I wish that what they should have done is design 40, 50 well-crafted levels that would have 10 hours of gameplay in them until you figured out, and maybe only 2 hours if you're brilliant and you just figure it out initially or immediately, and then have this extra mode. Once you finish that, let's go into this playground of all different kinds of stuff, everything we could fit on the ROM and we had the time to design, play through that.
Yeah, or maybe even then, because this game will throw scores at you straight away, and for most people, you won't care, but maybe if it had have been a shorter game, once you'd finish the game, it unlocks a score attack mode where it does record your best time so that you can, if you were so inclined and you had like your little brother or your big brother and you could pass the machine, you know, you could then go and say, well, you could then record your best times or something. I don't know. It feels like it was maybe just too much of enough of the good stuff to make this game a great game. You know, there are moments in the good levels, you play a good level and you think, that's absolutely brilliant, that.
Yeah.
I'll go on.
Yeah.
Then you get to one of the more frustrating ones and you think, well, I don't know whether I can.
So luckily so far, there hasn't been two consecutive frustrating levels for me because that would have ended the game for me. But when I finally get through a frustrating level and the next two or three levels are good puzzle levels, I feel reinvigorated and I want to go on.
Yeah. Yeah. And the good thing is, whether it be the Lynx or the Evercade, you know, if you're playing the handheld, you can just kind of turn it off for a bit, put it down, and leave it.
It's a great game on the Evercade. I wonder whether you can still buy that. It's the Atari Lynx Collection 2 that it's on, if anybody's interested.
Oh, is it 2, is it?
Yeah, it is. One? It's. I'm just looking at it right now. It's apparently cart number 14 that they released, so one of the very early ones, because, of course, they released 10 carts with the launch, didn't they?
There's a few. I mean, I think they're up to about 40. Odd.
Yeah. So Atari Lynx Collection 2 on the Evercade has like 8 or 10 Atari Lynx games, and Chips Challenge is one of them. And
that's right. The Atari Lynx Collection 1, I think, had Ninja Golf, didn't they? And that was on 1.
Ninja Golf. Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Maybe that was the Atari. That's a good game, Ninja Golf.
No, it isn't. That's a horrible game.
Ninja Golf. Ninja Golf. Maybe that was on one of the other Atari cards. Anyway, yeah, look, I'd recommend it. I'm glad I spent some time on it. I might go back and see if I can get to level 144 at least. And
so it's going to take me at least 10 years to get to level 144, I'm sure. But it's this game I'm going to pick up, and I have been picking up and just advancing in since I got my Evercade, and I'm just going to keep doing that.
Do you know what might be a good idea? Next time we're at Casa Gilmore in Scotland, take it up with the Evercade. It'd be a fun game to play together.
Yeah.
Like passing the cart and solving the things together.
Yeah.
That might be a nice way to do it.
Yeah.
But look, it's fun. You know, this the idea was we jump on and have a chat about in game club style.
Yeah.
dip our toes back into this kind of water and see how it feels.
And the great thing about recording just the two of us, mate, is that we do it in the mornings. So yes. no tiredness and just a good cup of coffee and a chat with a friend. It's great. I love it.
What was going on at the end of that playthrough episode that you did recently?
So I've been suffering from a bit of fatigue this week because I think I've had some virus or something like that. So I've been very, very tired. And we were recording late in the evening as usual. I'm an hour ahead of you guys. I started almost like rambling because I couldn't, my brain was working in tired Danish mode and finding the English words was just getting very, very hard. So I never listened to our episodes, but I'm going to have to listen to the last 20 minutes of that episode. Funny.
I went straight to the end after you said about it.
So could you hear it then? Listen.
You could definitely hear that, yeah. There's definitely a difference.
Yeah, all of a sudden my brain wouldn't find the right words.
Your English is so good. Sometimes I think we forget that it's not your first language.
Yeah.
So whenever you do stumble over words, you notice it because you never do it.
And I definitely do when I'm tired.
The rest of us stumble over words more than you do. I'll never forget Jim's Jack Daniels infused attempt to describe the playthrough Twitter. Honestly, if ever I need cheering up, that is what I go to.
Yep.
Just pure comedy. This has been really good, mate. And I don't know. Where do we go from here? Do we choose another game? And do we kind of have a? I don't think this is not going to become a monthly thing. This is not going to become, we're not going to kind of commit ourselves that you're going to hear from us in 3 weeks or whatever. But I love I love recording with you.
Likewise.
It's a way for us to get onto the Retro Asylum airwaves. I love looking at these old games and having a good chat about them one at a time.
And you and I, we like some games that some of the others don't. So stuff like Chips Challenge and the adventure games and stuff like that. So we should dive into more of that.
Yeah. You've played Resident Evil 2.
I played that a long time ago, but you guys don't want to record with me, so...
Well, it's one of my favourite games.
I've forgotten what it's all about. Is there zombies in it, isn't there?
Yeah, but something like that, yeah. And there's big guns and no snakes. And
it was a fantastic... It's my favourite Resident Evil game so far, and I've played 1, 2, and 4, 5, 6, I think. But 2 was fantastic.
So if I can get through the N60... Because I'd like to play... I've never played the N64 version of Resi 2. And it is a little bit different. I mean, it looks different slightly. Okay. But it also kind of introduces a couple of new control methods. If I can get through that over the next 6 weeks or so, shall we jump on and
see? Yeah, definitely be up for that. And I know Rich wants to jump on as well. He was ready to jump on. We were supposed to record about the PlayStation one. So
okay,
let's get him on
shall
as well.
Should we make that our next target then?
Yeah, let's.
Okay, so if any listeners want to come and play along, use the Game Club channel on Discord. I might just put a little something out there when this episode drops to kind of, a bit of a kind of set the Resident Evil theme and say that's what we're going to kind of have a chat about over the next few weeks.
I'll see if I can get my hands on the N64 card then so I can play it on the analog.
Yeah, I can imagine it's not a probably difficult one to get hold of, I wouldn't have thought.
No, let's see.
It's one of the more interesting ports because it was a marvel at the time that they managed to fit all of its speech and everything onto the car. It must be a massive car.
Yeah.
But I'm keen to give it a go. I was going to actually put it on the Mister earlier this week. But I haven't got a snack adapter for the N64.
Oh, okay. And okay.
If I'm playing an N64 game and I'm not using an N64 controller, it doesn't really work for me.
So what you should do, mate, is get the 8-bit Doom 64, whatever it's called, controller.
Is that good?
It is fantastic. It takes what was wrong with the N64 controller and fixes that. So take your... It's really just an N64 controller that's nice to hold, where you have the same buttons, the same button layouts, but the stick and the D-pad have switched places, and it's only through two prongs like we do these days, right?
Yeah.
So you get a feel of a modern controller, but still the exact same control scheme as the N64.
Have you got one, have you?
Yeah, I've got two.
So I assume you can't use it on the original hardware.
No, it's for the analog 64. That's what I'm using it for. But you can use it on your Mister for sure as well.
Okay. Is it wireless?
Yeah, it is. It's a great controller. I mean, I have four original N64 controllers lying next to my analog when we're playing Mario Party. And I when I start a new game, I often start on the real controller. But, I mean, I've just switched completely to that 8-bit view controller because it is what they should have done with the N64 controller. And it feels just right.
Okay. All right. Well, I might well pick one up. How much were they, if you don't mind me
asking? Not that bad. About 30 quid, I think.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
All right. I might pick one up then and give that a go on the Mister.
Yeah, it's really good. You should.
Interesting.
And there's one where they've actually had the right colors. I got it initially when my analog came. You could only choose between a white or a black controller with white or black buttons. But now I bought the gray one where the buttons have the same color scheme as on the original controller as well.
Really?
So you have your yellow buttons and your red, blue, and green and so on. So that's just so much easier because a lot of the games, when the prompt comes up to press something, it'll just give you the color, really.
Yeah, I've never bought an 8-bit Do controller, but people say they're
really high quality. Don't expect the quality of like a very expensive PlayStation PS5 5 or controller. Xbox.
Yeah, but it's not 50, 60 quid though.
No, exactly. Okay. But they are very close to it. I'm playing Dark Souls right now with the 8-bit Do Ultimate 2 PC, controller. Yeah. And it's fine. I mean, sometimes I wish I'd spent twice the amount and had just an Xbox controller for it. But it's fine. It's really good.
Well, why don't you just use your Xbox controller on it then? You can use that on a PC easy enough, can't you?
Yeah, should be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I will do that. But it's fine. I'm actually really enjoying it.
And level up your Dark Souls game, and there you go. you'll be acing those bosses from now on.
Yeah, I think that it's not the controller that's holding me back, mate. it's my old brain.
40-odd-year-old reflexes.
Yep.
So any shout-outs, mate?
Shout-outs to all of the other guys and all of the listeners who joined us at Arcade Club. That was a fantastic experience. And, my kids are now big enough to be at home by themselves for a weekend, so it's going to happen again. So those of you that I didn't see because you couldn't join us, I will see you at some point. It's going to be a yearly thing for me to do the pilgrimage to Arcade Club and see you guys for sure.
I hope so. Yeah, I was chatting to Jen about it actually this morning. She was saying, are you going to do another one this year? And I said, well, no, maybe not, but I think we have got a trip.
Yeah.
Hopefully a trip to Scotland.
Yes.
We just need to find a date for that.
Yeah.
But I definitely think an annual. And I love that time of year as well. Feels like just end of February, early March.
Yes.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect time
for
it.
End of winter.
And the weather is going to be horrible anyway, so staying inside and playing video games and drinking beer is just what the doctor wanted.
Yeah, you said something on the playthrough episode actually with Shine with me that I think you were talking to Donnie or Reese or something, and you're talking about people say, oh, you should never meet people off the internet.
Yeah.
Well, we are 30, there were 30 of us approximately who'd all met on the internet. And it really was, the whole weekend was just like being with friends that you've known for years.
Yes.
It didn't matter that it was the first time some of us have met in person. It just doesn't feel that way.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Does it? And you're just with like-minded people, you know, different walks of life, you know, different backgrounds, but we've all got that one thing in common that, you know, it was a really lovely weekend.
Fantastic weekend, for sure.
And I can't wait to do it again. Yeah, so shout out to all those guys. To all the other RA hosts, all 50,000 of them now. You know, they're always throwing out the good stuff. The A-team are back though, lads, so you've got to up your game now because, you know, this is what you got to compete with.
That's going to be tough.
It's going to be difficult for them. And all of the other podcasts, of course, that are out there, Kingy and Drisky and everyone else. I don't want to mention, well, I've just mentioned everyone, so by exclusion, I've just excluded everyone else. But all of everyone who's producing retro gaming content, good stuff. Right then, mate. That was fun.
That was good. Looking forward to the next one, mate. Let's see. I mean, as I said, I am playing Dark Souls right now, so finding time to playing something else is hard. But let's see if I can't find a copy of Resident Evil 2 for the N64.
Well, look, I don't want to commit us to a time, and I think that's where we kind of burnt out a bit last time, wasn't it? That, you know, the kind of the schedule in the end kind of got it got to be a bit more stressful than it kind of overrode the fun of playing the game. So we don't know when it will be, but at some point in the near future, the plan is to do an episode on Resi 2. We've been talking about it for long enough.
And after that, I want to do some pointing and clicking. It's been too long.
for sure. Mm-hmm. That don't involve goblins.
No. We want to be playing. Ooh, I've got Goblin 6 here that I haven't finished yet. I need to get into that. I actually enjoyed Goblins 4. I know there's something wrong with me, but I actually enjoyed playing through Goblins 4. I may need help.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you probably do. You've been for a long time. Right. Until next time then, mate.
See you later.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.